I've now come to a place called Levante, which is one of those places that have been just behind the lines most of the war, in the forgotten battlefield between Ypres and the Somme, just over the border, over the Belgian-French border. And we've come to a cemetery which people probably wouldn't come to. You don't get many tourists come to a place like this. Why would they come here unless you've got a reason to come here? But the reason I've come here today is to say hello to a man who lived just a couple of miles from me, Fred Johnson. He was serving with the 2nd Battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment on the 19th of December 1914 at the age of 27. He was killed in action here, not far away from where we're standing. And I found an article in the local Northampton paper that's got a photograph of him looking back at us as usual, looking very young, 27 years old. And it simply says, bullet through the brain, it says. One of two sons of Mrs. Fanny Johnson of Green Street, serving in the army, Private Fred Johnson of the 2nd North Ants, is reported killed in action at La Bassée on December the 21st, it says here, but then they found out it was actually 2 days earlier, on the 19th. Private Johnson, who'd seen service in Egypt and India, he came from Egypt with his regiment in September, and he'd been at the front ever since, so that's what, 3 months, isn't it? His mother received a letter from him dated the 18th of December, so the day before he died, stating that he was well, but 3 days later a comrade wrote informing her that he'd been killed, shot through the head. He'd served in the regiment for 3 years, and before joining the army he worked for Messrs C&E Lewis in Northampton. So he's one of those men that's left school, gone into the boot and shoe industry in Northampton, and then decided to join the regular army, professional army. He's gone out to the British Empire places, and he's ended up here and been killed probably by a sniper. There was nothing major going on, I wouldn't have thought, just before Christmas on that day. There was elsewhere, there was a major battle up at Plug Street Wood on the 19th of December, but around here not a lot going on. And he's been possibly killed by a sniper, and here he lies, and he doesn't have any kind of family inscription on the base of his grave. Next to him it does, look, we've got Private J.E. Brown from the Worcestershire Regiment, died on the 3rd of September 1918 at the other end of the war, 4 years later, and fought and died in the Great War, lovingly remembered by mother and father. So we've got 1914, 1915 graves here, and 1918, right at the end of the war, people are dying here. It shows that the front line between 1914 and 1918 around here, it hasn't moved. So we come to a typical French cemetery in the town of Béthune, which was behind British lines for the duration of the First World War, and it's an enormous civilian cemetery. Now, it can be a little tricky to find this particular cemetery. Béthune, the town, is 29 kilometres north of Arras, and what you have to do is follow the French signs indicating the cemetery Nord. That's the name of the civilian cemetery that's there. There's a small parking area out the front. If you go through the main gate of the civilian cemetery, keep the civilian graves on your left, and within a few minutes, you'll come to a plot of officers from 1914. This is the period before the Imperial War Graves Commission decided that all soldiers should be treated the same in death, regardless of rank in the army or civilian life. And in several cemeteries where people had died of wounds in the early part of the war, or even killed in action, officers were actually buried together. And separate from the soldiers, the NCOs and the other ranks. So just on the edge of the Béthune Town Cemetery, there's a separate plot, plot number one. And in the first row, there are all officers, of which there are a number of Indian officers. And the one that I've come to see is Lieutenant Frank A. Depasse. He was with the 31st Poona Horse, who died 25th of November 1914. And on his headstone is the regimental badge of the Poona Horse, but there's also the Victoria Cross. And his story is that on the 23rd of November 1914, near Festubert, not far from where we are, the Germans had dug a sap up to a trench that was manned by the 34th Prince Albert Victor's own Puna horse, and they'd blown a breach in the defences. This was guarded by our man, Lieutenant F.A. de Passe. The enemy had blocked their sap with a sandbag traverse, and on the 24th, de Passe, with three Indian troopers, had crawled up to the sap and blown up the traverse. However, the Germans soon repaired it, and on the 25th, de Passe was shot by a sniper from behind while trying to repair the parapet of the British trench. And his citation says, for conspicuous bravery near Festubert on the 24th, in entering a German sap and destroying a traverse in the face of enemy bombs, of subsequently rescuing under heavy fire a wounded man who was lying exposed in the open. De Passe lost his life on this day in a second attempt to capture the aforementioned sap, which had been reoccupied by the enemy. Now, during the First World War, Bethune, the town, was behind the British lines and was free from bombardment and remained an important railway and hospital centre, as well as a corps and divisional headquarters. And it was the 33rd Casualty Clearing Station that was based here in the town until December of 1917. But in the early part of 1918, Bethune began to suffer from constant shell fire, and in April 1918, during the Lees offences, the German forces reached a place called Lokon, which is just 5 kilometres to the north. On the 21st of May 1918, there was a massive German bombardment on the town. It did a lot of damage, and it wasn't until October of 1918, just a few weeks before the armistice, that pressure from the Germans was relaxed. So there's now actually 3,004 Commonwealth burials of the First World War, and just 11 of them are unidentified. That tells us that most of them have died of wounds here. During that bombardment in December 1917, there was 26 men from the 1st 8th Manchester Regiment that were killed by one of those shells whilst they were marching back to their rest billets. In the Second World War, the fighting came again to this area of France. There's 19 burials from the second conflict. Two of those are unidentified, but there's also 122 French soldiers that are buried here and 87 German war graves. Perhaps these were men that were prisoners of war, but of those, 38 are unidentified. And the cemetery was one of those that was designed by Sir Edwin Lutyens with help from George Hartley Goldsmith. And it is a beautiful place. Whatever time of the year that you visit, when we first visited, it was, I think, February of 2024. And as we'll see later in the podcast, I returned a few weeks ago. The architecture and the horticulture of this cemetery, it really does make it a beautiful place for the dead soldiers of the Commonwealth to lie in peace. I'd come to Bethune to tell the story of several soldiers that are buried here. And as people listen to the podcast regularly will know, I like to come and find the graves of men from my hometown of Northampton. And I think that their stories are of interest to people throughout the world, because they're just typical stories, really. Stories of young men that are not famous. The stories wouldn't be told in any history books. But they give us an idea of who these men were, regardless of where they come from. And the first one I went to see was Private 12862 Arthur Ellis, serving with the 1st Battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment, who died of his wounds on the 2nd of September 1915 at the age of just 21. And his parents chose this inscription for his headstone: "Father, in thy gracious keeping, leave we now thy servant sleeping." The battalion diary tells us that on that day they'd been digging trenches. The weather was very wet, and there were just two casualties, both men wounded. One of those, of course, would be Arthur. In the 1911 census, we find Arthur, then aged 17, working as so many people did here in Northampton in the shoe industry, and he was living with his parents, Charles and Annie, and three brothers and one sister. We have a photograph of him with his peaked cap, wearing his uniform buttoned up to his neck, not looking directly at the camera. What he is doing is looking very, very young.
His death was announced in the local newspaper, but his mum wrote a poem about it. The paper described Arthur as the beloved son of Mr. and Mrs. Ellis, and the words of that poem went like this: "Oh, how sweet it will be in that beautiful land, so free from all sorrow and pain, with songs on our lips and with harps in our hands, to meet one another again." And it occurred to me when we were standing by the headstone, by the grave, that his parents will have met Arthur again, because they would have passed over now into whatever world he was in, wherever that is, they're with him too. And also in the local newspaper, I found a photograph of the original wooden grave marker that the director of the grave registration inquiries had taken for the parents. In front of the grave marker is a wreath of flowers. Now, we don't know whether Mr. and Mrs. Ellis laid that wreath themselves or whether someone else did it on their behalf. Perhaps they sent it over for the Imperial War Graves Commission to lay it at his headstone on their behalf. But I took that photograph with me of the wreath and the original wooden cross and the wooden grave marker. And I took a photograph of it against the New Portland headstone. I read that poem to Arthur. I touched his headstone. And in some way, hopefully, that connects Arthur with his parents and his home of Northampton.
So just three rows and probably, 25 yards as the crow flies, we come to another Northampton man, Private 5556 H. Balderson, Northamptonshire Regiment, died on the 17th of March 1915, and the complete opposite on the headstone to what we've just seen, where the family inscription should be, because there's absolutely nothing at all. And what we know about him is that his father was called, he was called Harry, his father was called Henry, and Harry has died, as we can see on his headstone there, on the 17th of March. I don't know whether he knew, but his father at home had died on the 11th of March, just 6 days before, at the age of 64. Wow. And his brother Arthur was killed, over 2 years later, just up to 2 years later, on the Somme in the Battle of Boom Ravine on February of 1917. And there's another one that died of his wounds here, as many of these did, because it was a casualty clearing station. The newspaper simply said, "Official news has been received by Mr. and Mrs. Balderson of St. Edmund Street in Northampton that their son, Private Balderson, died of wounds. He was one of the battalion's reservists who came over with the Australian contingent in December to rejoin his regiment."
Okay.
So I didn't know that. He'd come from Australia.
He'd
emigrated to Australia, then he's come back with a load of other Aussies to join their local town memorials. So just a few paces away from Balderson, we were just looking at, there's many more headstones here, all in a neat row. And we come to two that look just like all the others. There's no reference on their grave to suggest what happened to these men. And that's not an accident, it's deliberate, because these two lads I'm looking at, two Welshmen, died on the 15th of February 1915, both of them. Private William Price, who was 41 years old when he died here, and next to him, Private R. Morgan, both serving with the 2nd Battalion of the Welsh Regiment. Why have I come to see them? They've died together, they haven't been hit by a shell, they haven't been shot by an enemy bullet, they've been shot at dawn, they've been executed on the 15th of February 1915 together. And the story goes that a month earlier, on the 20th of February 1915, their regiment was engaged in digging trenches near Bethune, and it was snowing. Battalion War Diary records the death of the regimental goat, who died from heart failure. It was that cold. During the evening, Morgan and Price got drunk and they shot their company sergeant major. CSM Hayes died the next day. He'd enlisted at 14. He'd seen 18 years active service, including in the Boer War. All three men, the victim and their murderers, are buried in the same cemetery, the register giving the cause of death of the victim as accidental injuries. But these chaps have not been shot here, like so many of them were, for cowardice or desertion. They've been shot for murder. They obviously obviously, perhaps had a grudge against CSM Hayes. Maybe he treated them, in their view, badly. They've got drunk whilst out of the line. They've shot him. And whether you're in the army or not, that's a capital offence in 1915. So still in Bethune Cemetery, we've found another man shot at dawn in different circumstances and 2 years after the two lads that we just looked at. This is Private Ernest Bryan of the 10th Battalion, the Cheshire Regiment, and he's died on the 27th of October 1917, executed for desertion. He was 33 years old. In civilian life, he was a gentleman's servant, and he was wounded in both legs early on in the 1916 Somme offensive. When he came back to his unit, he made off during the training exercises, but he was arrested 4 days later. He'd got all the way back to Boulogne. He was obviously trying to get back to the UK. He went back to his unit. He again absconded just before going into the line. He was arrested in Ballou 9 days later, and he gave false particulars of his identity. But they realised who he was. And so he's not been executed for desertion once. He's done it twice. And he obviously was of bad character as well. This is also towards the end of October 1917. We've got the French army's mutinied. Mm-hmm. The Battle of Passchendaele's going badly. They obviously wanted to make an example because they're frightened if they don't, others will do it. And he's paid the price for that. So we're now going looking for the company sergeant major that those two Welsh boys murdered. And we didn't think that he would be buried next to his murderers, but next to his murderers is a man with the same name, Hayes. But it's not him, he's in a different regiment. 3B. 3B?
B will be this side, yeah.
Right. So in the same cemetery.
Too far away.
Not too far away, no. We're now looking for... There he is, Company Sergeant Major, number 5019, H.J. Hayes, Welsh Regiment, died on the 21st of January 1915. He's got the Christian cross on his grave, and below that, his family, his mother, has chosen these words. Oh, for the touch of the vanished hands and the voices that are still. Mother, in brackets. She's made it known that they're her words. And I wonder whether she ever knew happened to her son, that he didn't die in action, that he was murdered by two lads that were serving underneath him. Not come across that before. I'm sure there are other stories like that, but that's the first one I've come across, and it makes it doubly tragic, isn't it?
Yeah.
So all three men have been killed in different circumstances by their own side because of the same incident. I was guiding a group of people from the Durham area, northeast England. And one of the people on board had served in the parachute regiment of the British Army in recent times, and he wanted to come and see a relative of his, Private 12786 Herbert Moore, who was serving with the 12th Battalion of the Northumberland Fusiliers when he died of wounds here in Bethune on the 14th of November 1916 at the age of 24. And he lived in a place called Benwell, which is in Newcastle upon Tyne. He married a lady called Eliza in January of 1912, and a few months later, their only child, a son Thomas, was born, and he lived until 1984. And all that we know about Herbert, because like so many, his service record was lost during the Second World War, is that while serving with the Northumberland Fusiliers, he was wounded on the Somme in September of 1916, and it was here, as I say, at Bethune, at the casualty clearing station, nearly 2 months later, that he succumbed to his wounds. Maybe he caught an infection. Maybe he had an operation that went wrong. We don't know. We can't tell. What we do know is that his wife, Eliza, she went on to get married again. And Herbert's relative paid his respects. We played the last post. We listened to a poem. Everybody else on the tour was gathered around. It was a very, as it always is, very emotional moment whenever we do these personal visits to a headstone. And it's a moment that Herbert's relative, especially with his service in the armed forces, will never forget. Another young man from Northampton
was Private William Alfred John Hallett, service number 436, serving with the 7th Battalion of the Northamptonshire Regiment, who died of his wounds on the 2nd of February 1917 at the age of just 17. The newspaper tells us that he was one of many members of the Boys' Brigade that was serving with the colours. He joined up at the outbreak of war when employed in a motor accessories work in Northampton. He was 19 years of age and a member of the Doddridge Bible class, amongst members of which the news of his death has come as a severe shock. The battalion diary tells us that there was not a lot happening again that day. At 2 o'clock this morning, the enemy bombarded our left company front with minis, Minenwaffers, and aerial darts. Artillery retaliation was called for and the enemy stopped. Private Boyson was killed by a sniper. There were 4 men killed and 3 wounded during the day. And as we know, William was one of them. In Adnick Road in Northampton in 1911 lived Edward and Maggie Whitehead. And they had, 9 children. But poor Maggie was to lose her husband Edward before the war, and during the conflict, 3 of her sons also fell. The local paper tells us that Edward was cycling along the Barrack Road in Northampton at the same time as a motor car belonging to Mr. Quinn of Dallington was being driven by Quinn's chauffeur towards Kingsthorpe. When Edward turned, apparently with intention of riding into Launch Street, there was a collision and he was badly injured. He was admitted to the local hospital and seen by a Dr. Dorothy Logan, who was a surgeon, and she said that Whitehead was admitted at 1:10. He was unconscious, showed symptoms of injuries to the head, and in the afternoon he became worse. There was a meeting with other surgeons as to whether an operation would be effective, and it was decided that it wouldn't be. Whitehead died at 7:30. Death was caused by a fracture of the skull, and a post-mortem also revealed that an operation would not have saved his life. There were no other injuries apart from the fracture to his skull. So Alfred was the first to die. He was a private in the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Scots Fusiliers, who died at Bethune here on the 17th of May 1915. And once again, the newspaper tells us that he was just 19 years old and was formerly in the Special Reserve of the Northamptonshire Regiment. He'd been in the army for 2.5 years, and during the 8 months he was at the front, he went through some very big engagements. He has 4 older brothers in the army, one of which has been invalided home. But 2 years after this, the local paper was to report that the 2 remaining brothers that were still serving in the army had both died. Private 2401, Eric Whitehead, was serving with the 1st 4th Battalion of the Northamptonshires. This is a territorial unit, and he died of his wounds on the 26th of April 1917. He had enlisted, like so many of them did, in September of 1914, and had been wounded soon after he went to the front on the 24th of September 1915. He was reported as being dangerously ill in October of 1915, whilst in Gibraltar, but a month later had recovered sufficiently that he was out of danger and returned home to England at the end of 1915. A medical report in May of 1916 said that he was wounded during the Dardanelles campaign. He was hit in the back by a shrapnel bullet. There was an operation that was carried out, but the result was that he was completely paralysed in both legs. And worse than that, he had a complete loss of power over his bowels, and that his condition was going to be permanent. So this poor lad had been wounded in the summer of 1915, but it was nearly 2 years later before he eventually succumbed to his wounds and maybe illness as well. Still in hospital, he must have been, you assume, in absolute agony during that period. Eric died at the Star and Garter Hospital in Richmond in Surrey, and he's buried in a local cemetery. He was 26 years of age. Prior to that, he'd been working at Messrs. G.M. Tebbutt shoe manufacturers in Clare Street in Northampton, and Tebbutt himself gave up a son to the Great War. His son was called Arthur, and he was killed in Gaza in April of 1917. The other son, George, who was known as Bert, he was also killed in Palestine on April the 19th, 1917. So those two lads had died just a week apart, in addition to the youngest one that had died in Bethune 2 years earlier, and the father who died in a terrible accident just before the Great War. I've asked this question before, but I'll ask it again. How on earth do these families recover from such tragedy? At a time in our history when there was very little support for families like this. There is now, there's more support available now, of course. But 100 years ago, basically, they were on their own. They had to either survive or go under. It would have been Maggie, wouldn't it? Maggie, the mum of all those children. It would have been her that held the remaining members of the family together, because she was now the head of the family, or what was left of it. Now, as we were wandering around this cemetery, we came across another plot that was full of officers. There were no other ranks or NCOs buried with them. And like I said earlier, this was before that rule was brought in, that officers and men, other ranks, NCOs, should be buried together with no distinction of rank. And there we noticed not a Portland headstone, but a stone cross. And on that stone cross, in amongst all the Portland headstones, it says Captain S.E.N. Cesari, Royal Army Medical Corps, killed in action at Vermelles, October the 3rd, 1915. Erected by the officers, the non-commissioned officers, and the men of No. 6 Field Ambulance. And it stuck out like a sore thumb, because there were many of these memorials that were erected by the comrades of the men that fell, and most of them, in line with the rules of the Imperial War Graves Commission as it was then, were replaced with the Portland headstone that we've got so used to. Now, I've seen quite a lot of these private memorials erected by comrades of the dead man, mainly in cemeteries that are behind the lines, like this, where men have died of their wounds. But in this case, this captain serving with the Royal Army Medical Corps didn't die of his wounds, he didn't die of disease, he was actually killed in action. And I've discovered his story by looking into the newspaper archives. He was Captain Sidney Fraser McAlpine Cesari. He was 25 years old and he was known as Sid. And his father was an Italian. And his death, like so many others, was announced in the local newspaper in Perthshire in Scotland. It says, "We deeply regret to announce the death in action of a young and popular Perthshire officer in the person of Captain Sidney Cesari, the second son of the late Edward Cesari of Inverness, who is officially reported as having been killed in France on the 3rd of October. Cesari went to France with the BEF in August 1914 and was promoted to the rank of captain in July of last year. His commanding officer, in communicating the news, said, "It is a painful task for me to report to you the death of Captain Cesari, who was killed on the evening of the 3rd. He was a personal friend of mine, and I am deprived at once of a friend and brave and courageous officer, and the only consolation I can offer to all his friends is that he gave up his life for his king and country, and that he would do it all over again if that were possible. Yours sincerely, P. Sampson, Captain of the Royal Army Medical Corps." And Mrs. Cesari, his mum, she also received a personal telegram from Lord Kitchener. What else do we know about him? Well, he was educated at the Perth Academy and at Edinburgh University. He gained medals for surgery and anatomy. And after graduating in July of 1913, he was appointed the house surgeon at the Greenock Infirmary. He was very well known in Perth and the surrounding area. And he was also a good sportsman. He was a rugby enthusiast. He played for Edinburgh University and for Greenock Wanderers. And What was he like as a person? Well, we know that he was quiet and unassumed, and he gained for himself a wide circle of friends wherever he was situated, and he was held in high respect and esteem by all who knew him, but by none more than his intimate friends. Mrs. Cesari's only other son, Oscar Cesari, was formerly in New Zealand. He joined the New Zealand contingent. In another newspaper article, we find out more about his sporting prowess. Those at home will remember chiefly his buoyant personality and physical excellence. He was one of the best bats in the academy and probably the strongest rugby player that the school has ever produced. The Score magazine says that the opposing goalkeeper had not much time to stand and think when Cesari was playing centre forward, for Cesari has always been framed for his rushing tactics. It seems but yesterday he stepped forward to receive from the hands of Mr. John Masterson the Score Championship Cup and Gold Badge as the best athlete of 1906, and modestly acknowledged the vociferous cheering of his companions. Now his devotion to king and country has brought him to his death, and with his fine unselfish courage, he would not have had it otherwise. So what were the circumstances of his death? Well, he was simply handing over the dressing station that he was manning to another doctor when he was hit by a sniper's bullet and died just a short time afterwards. Now, the family must have been very well known, not just locally. We know that Lord Kitchener sent a personal message, and also they got one from Buckingham Palace. They received a message that said the King and Queen deeply regret the loss you and the army have sustained by the death of Captain Cesari. Their Majesties truly sympathise with you in your sorrow. So it's obvious that the family were very well connected. Maybe that had something to do with that original memorial being left in place in Bethune. Maybe they pulled some strings, which meant that when anyone visiting Bethune Town Cemetery is drawn to Cesari's grave because it looks different to all the others, it is different to all the others. Officially, it shouldn't be there in that way. It should be a Portland headstone. We may have passed a Portland headstone, but we didn't. We paused at Sid's. We remembered Sid, and now we tell Sid's story. The casualty clearing station at Bethune at any one time was capable of dealing with 4,000 casualties, and there was also 6 field ambulances that were established in the town during the 1915 battle in May of Festubert, which is nearby. And then during the Battle of Loos in September, field ambulances acted as casualty clearing stations. And from here, trains would take the survivors to base hospitals like Rouen and Le Tréport, Versailles and Etaples. And if you think that there could have been at any one time 4,000 casualties, there must have been tens of thousands of soldiers that passed through this casualty clearing station. But such was the expertise and care from the doctors and nurses that worked there, only about 3,000 of them died either of their wounds or of disease connected with their wounds. And that itself is a tribute to everyone that played their part in Bethune, a place behind the lines that you drive past on the motorway down to the Somme and to Arras. You might not think to stop there, but it's worth stopping there, not just to look in the cemetery. There's another one, Bethune Military Cemetery, nearby, to go up into the real-built town centre itself. It's a typical northern France market town. As we know, it suffered severe damage later on in the war. There's lots of cafes there and bakeries, and it's an ideal place to have a break if you're touring the nearby battlefields. And the other thing that the cemetery is noted for was in October of 1914, one of the Red Cross inspectors, a Colonel Edward Stewart, met with Fabian Ware and passed comment about the danger of losing the inscription detail on the makeshift wooden crosses that were there. And it must have had a big impression on Fabian Ware. From that moment, his mobile unit took responsibility for registering the graves of the fallen and eventually, 3 years later, saw the formation of the Imperial War Graves Commission that we, of course, now know as the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. Wherever you go on the battlefields, there's always some form of history. The 33rd Casualty Clearing Station that was here in Bethune from September 1916 until December 1917, the building it was housed in, it still exists. It's known as the St. Vast College, an impressive building, one that I'm sure can tell us many stories that we haven't had an opportunity to tell today. The building itself, on the 7th of August 1916, was hit by a 15-inch German shell, and 204 patients were evacuated to the cellars beneath the building, and the medical staff continued the operations. The 24 servicemen were killed, mostly drivers of the Army Service Corps, and they're buried side by side in Plot 5, Row H. Five of the nurses that carried out the work that night were later awarded military medals for their efforts. Now, we normally end the podcast with playing the last post, but I want to do something different this week. I wanted to play a poem written by one of the most well-known war poets, Siegfried Sassoon. I'm not a fan of all of his work. It's personal choice, isn't it? Personal preference. But this poem is called Died of Wounds. I think it's appropriate because nearly all of the men that we talked about this week did die of their wounds at Bethune Casualty Clearing Station. And in this poem, Sassoon talks about the harrowing experiences of a wounded soldier in a military hospital. It's told through the eyes of a fellow soldier, witnessing the soldier's suffering and the mental anguish as he struggles with his wounds and the horrors of war. The soldier he's talking about is dying. He's going through physical and emotional torment. And the poem concludes with the poignant contrast between the soldier's death and the man who has got a slight wound lying peacefully on his bed. And this highlights the dreadful contrast between a man who's perhaps got a blighty and another man who's going to be buried in one of the Commonwealth War Graves Commission cemeteries forevermore in perpetuity. Thank you for tuning in for the podcast that I, Terry Wenham, called Tales from the Battlefields. Until next time, leave you in the hands of Siegfried Sassoon.
Died of wounds. His wet white face and miserable eyes brought nurses to him more than groans and sighs. But hoarse and low and rapid rose and fell his troubled voice. He did the business well. The ward grew dark, yet he was still complaining and calling out for Dickie. Curse the wood, it's time to go. Oh Christ, and what's the good? We'll never take it, it's always raining. I wondered where he'd been. Then heard him shout, they snipe like hell. Oh Dickie, don't go out. I fell asleep. Next morning, he was dead, in some slight wound, smiling on the bed.
As we said earlier, tens of thousands of soldiers would have passed through this particular casualty clearing station. 3,000 of them are still there. But regardless of whether they went home or they're still there, one thing's for certain. I'm sure that a thought went through their head. I want to go home.
Over the sea.